So we have been doing for the past 4 or 5 weeks this text called Hymn to Sri Dakshinamurti, which is a summary of the highest knowledge of the Upanishads. It talks about the identity of me and God, or this consciousness that we call as Brahman or God. And in fact, there is no separation. But in my ignorance, I think of myself as being separate. And so the aim of this particular text and a lot of the Upanishads and a lot of the Hindu scriptures are to show the identity between that consciousness and me. And this is a concept that is a little difficult to understand, because most of us perceive God as a Dvaita, as a separate. And which is okay, you know, he's almighty, he's all powerful, he's all loving, I am ignorant, I am a small entity. He's the creator, I am the created. And you can start with that knowledge, and which is good. And I love him, I worship him, I'm grateful to him, and I remember him. And through all that, I develop love and compassion and kindness. Not only love for God, but love for all the creatures. And that is good, and that is wonderful. But the knowledge is incomplete. That's what the scriptures say. As long as you consider him separate, that he and I are separate. And the final achievement or the nadir or the summit or the zenith of the knowledge can only occur when the limited individual perceives his or her oneness with the whole reality, with that whole consciousness and with all beings. Because everything is a manifestation of that consciousness. So this text, in 10 verses, attempts to make that fact clear to us. And there are certain concepts that are a little difficult to understand for beginners. The reason we chose this text, because the majority of you have been coming to these classes for 5 to 6 years, 4 to 5 years, and in the past we have done simpler topics like spirituality and, you know, ethics and morals and love and compassion and service, you know. And I felt that it is time to move on instead of repeating the same ideas. So it is like a progression to PhD, even though we don't feel that we are at that level. But what we shall try to do is, through discussion and study, try to understand this text, which is a very beautiful text. And the wonderful part about it is that each verse gives that same message with a different focus. The identity of me and God is explained again and again in this book, focusing and emphasizing something different. So even though it may appear that these ideas are somewhat esoteric and difficult to understand, but if you are patient and repeatedly listen and go home and read this text and think about what we have talked here, these ideas will become a little clearer. Last week, we had done the verse, second verse, which your book is the on page number 24, where it says that this world appeared from the Creator just as from a seed the tree emerges. So the consciousness is the seed, or the Lord is the seed from whom this whole world emerged. And we had talked about that, that just as but in the case of the seed dies, but the Lord does not perish, so that is a difference. And then they gave many other examples in that verse, just as a painter creates a beautiful painting, just as a magician, you know, through magic can create all different illusions, just as a great yogi, there are some great powerful men who can actually create worlds. And they talk about the sage Vishwamitra. So the Lord has created this universe, and all different examples were given. And that is how the world came into being. So that was what we had talked about last time. So having understood that this world is created and there is a creator, then how can I experience that oneness? So we are actually going into the essence of this text today with the verse number 3, which is on page 33. So that is what we shall be doing today, page number 33. Yasyaiva sfuranam sadatmakam asat kalpartakam bhasate sakshatattvam asiti vedvachasa yo bodhayatyashritan yat sakshatkaranat bhavet na punara vrittirbhavambo nidau tasmai shri guru murtaye nama idam shri dakshina murtaye. So every verse ends with that one line, tasmai shri guru murtaye nama idam shri dakshina murtaye. So I prostrate to my divine teacher, who is nothing but the Lord himself. As you can see in that picture on that side, there are four students, and then the teacher in the middle is actually a manifestation of the Lord himself. If you read the story in the beginning of the book, that these four students needed the knowledge and they approached the Lord, and the Lord manifested in the form of that young mendicant and gave this knowledge to them. And that same knowledge has been placed in this text. So he says, I prostrate to the Lord who is my teacher. And so that is what they say, that one has to have reverence for the knowledge and for the teacher for this knowledge to become permanent. Yasyaiva sfuranam. Yasya means his. His means the Lord, the consciousness. Eiva sfuranam, its manifestation, its brilliance. Sadatmakam, it is always there, the permanent. The Lord is sadatmak, is always there, sadatmak. Asat kalpartakam bhasate. That consciousness, which is all permanent, which is all pervading, which is God, which is ever was, is, and will be, appears in this world as temporary. The Lord, who is permanent, manifests and created this temporary world. Asat kalpartakam bhasate, but sakshat tattvam asi. Sakshat, but he makes it very clear in this text, tattvam asi, that thou art. Tattvam asi, that thou art. So that consciousness, that God who you think far away, is nothing but your own nature. Iti veda vachasa. Veda vachasa, these are the words of the scriptures. The Vedas are our scriptures, just as Bible is for the Christians, Quran is for the Muslims. So the Vedas are the scriptures, which Veda Vachas are the words of these Vedas. So one who approaches the teacher with humility, with a desire to know, can understand this essence of the Vedas through proper thinking and proper understanding. Having understood that knowledge clearly, sakshat means just as if it is in front of me, just as this book is in my hand, I can see the book and touch it. So for a wise person, that knowledge, that God, who is that God, is very clear. In another place, Shankaracharya ji says, just as when you have a fruit in your hand, how clearly you can see the fruit, you have an orange or an apple. So for a wise person, consciousness is that clear. That's why Ramakrishna Paramhansa, a great saint, when the student approached him and he said, have you seen God? He says, yes. He says, I see God more clearly than I see you, even though you are standing in front of me, but I see God more clearly. And that's what impressed that student. And that's what, so he was not bluffing. He really could see, because that was, so he says, one who has experienced this truth, that person is not born again. That person does not go into ignorance. Because you and I, we at this moment are ignorant because we do not know this truth. But one who understands it and one who experiences it. See, intellectually I might speak, you know, I and that consciousness are one. But until you actually experience it in the depth of your meditation, your knowledge is only intellectual knowledge. It is like somebody has read the books of medicine, but has not actually practiced medicine, has not seen a patient, has not operated on. He may have read all the books of surgery, but when it comes time to remove the appendix, if he doesn't know how to do that, then his knowledge is incomplete. So similarly, the spiritual knowledge at this time is just an intellectual exercise where you and I are talking about it, but a saint or a wise person having experienced that knowledge then no longer goes and gets lost in this world of ignorance. He or she, it becomes, the knowledge becomes so clear, then no longer is that person lost in this world of ignorance. And to that teacher I prostrate, the one who gives me this knowledge of the identity of me and God. So today maybe I will just talk about the first line, that what is God and what is this world. So here is a chart. There is God or Brahman. The moment you say God, then it creates an image in my mind. For a Hindu, it might be Krishna or Shiva. For a Christian, it might be Jesus. For a Buddhist, it might be Buddha. That's why they use the word Brahman or consciousness. When I say consciousness, there is no form that comes to my mind. So that consciousness that is all-pervading is described with three qualities: Sat, Chit, and Anand. Sat means permanent existence. So God always was, is, and always will be. There is never a time when he was not there. That's why even the Bible says that God alone was. And then he decided to create the world, and that's what he did. So Sat is the permanent existence. And then God is all-knowing. You know, they say he's in your heart. He knows every thought. Even before you know it, he knows it. What you are going to say, what you are going to do, what you are thinking, the Lord knows. And that's why they say nothing is hidden from him. So he is here as knowledge, as the knowledge. That's why he says, Sfuranam Asat Kalparsakam. So that's consciousness, Bhasate, it shines. So it is that consciousness which shines. It is permanent. It is always shining. It is never, God never goes to sleep. You and I may go to sleep, but the consciousness, even in my deep sleep, it is there. It is constantly there, because the moment somebody calls out my name, I wake up. Why? Because I, as the consciousness, is still there. So he is permanent, he is all-knowing, and he is all-blissful. Then nowhere in the scriptures they describe God as being sad or miserable or unhappy or suffering. No, he's always joyful. He has this inner bliss. You know, you and I may have a little joy. I get a donut, I become happy. Or I get, you know, piece of, somebody gives me an ice cream or a candy, I become happy. Or I get a new dress or a new outfit or new piece of jewelry or a new car or a new house or a new job or a new girlfriend. So something or the other, when you get new, then you become happy. But then after a while, the happiness goes away. You know, the job starts. You know, they say, oh, this job is, it's horrible. I don't want to go to work. This person I loved so much, after a while, you know, it's okay. You know, then you start seeing the blemishes. This new car or this new house, after a while, becomes old. But he is permanent. Bliss, because the Lord does not depend on an object, because the Lord is of the nature of bliss. While you and I depend on object for our joy. So, he is temporary, he is permanent, and this world, and that includes me, I am temporary, I am changing. I was something at one time, I was a child, and then I became a youth, and then I became middle age, and then old age, and then death. So you and I are temporary, he is permanent. He is all-knowing, and I am ignorant. Yeah, I may know a little bit, I know English, I may know a little medicine, I may know. But I don't know Russian, I don't know quantum physics, I don't know engineering, there is so much I don't know. You know, I mean, the whole world is full of so much knowledge, and I know very little. And all I know is, even out of that little, a very small part. Even being a specialist these days, you can't keep up even with your own field because of the explosion of knowledge all over the world. There is so much knowledge. So he is all-knowing, I am ignorant. And then he is all bliss, and I am sorrowful. Yeah, I may have flashes of little bit of joy here and there, but in general, you know, life is not perfect. You ask anybody, is your life perfect? No, it's okay. But if only I had this, I would be more happy. If only I got this person, I would be more happy. or if only if I got rid of this person, I would be more happy, you know. So we are always looking for permanent happiness. But they say, oh, the permanent happiness can only be experienced when you experience His presence in your heart and you experience your identity. Until then, you will be looking for happiness in temporary things. And the same thing about our life. If we look at it, everybody wants to live forever. You know, there is nobody, even no matter how old the person is, he may be suffering from end-stage cancer, but he will say, let me still go to the Mayo Clinic. You know, maybe they may have a cure, or maybe I may, let me go to the MD Anderson Hospital in Houston, or maybe let me go to this herbal specialist or this homeopathic. And why? Because people want to live forever. They want to live forever because that is our nature. Our nature is permanent existence. That is who I really am, this consciousness. But not understanding, I am looking for permanence in this world. That reminds me of a very beautiful story. The great Buddha, you know, he had, of course, he was a realized master. And one day he was walking through the villages with his group of monks who were accompanying him, and he would go from village to village and town to town, and he would stop for a while and give his discourses, and people would receive him and listen to him and be inspired, and some of them would join, you know, his order, become monks, others would start practicing his teachings, and that's how he spread his knowledge, just traveling on foot. And so he went into this village, and the people were very impressed. He stayed for a few days. And one day, the ladies who had been listening to him every day was very inspired by him. She was crying. And she came crying and she brought the dead body of her child. And she was crying and bitterly crying. This was a 15 or 16-year-old young boy. And she was so depressed. And Buddha said, what happened? And she said, you know, I don't know. What happened, he was fine, and then suddenly he fell ill, you know, 2-3 days ago. We took him to the doctor. Nobody could figure out. In those days, of course, medicine was not that advanced, and he just got sick and died. And I'm sad, and I'm crying. And so Buddha tried to console her, and she says, you know, you are the Lord himself. I've heard that you are a great prophet and a great master. He says, I don't know, people call me that, but I'm just the awakened one. That's why he called himself Buddha. Means I am the awakened one. He did not say I am a prophet or a master, or the other people called him that. Like Christ never claimed, you know, that I am the great Messiah and all. He just spread the knowledge. It was others who praised him. So that these great prophets, they don't praise themselves. So he said, yeah, I am the awakened one. So she says, you know what? I've heard that you can perform miracles. I want you to bring this boy to life. I am your devotee. I have been listening to you. And I cannot live without him. If he is not alive, I'm going to commit suicide. I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to go jump in the well and kill myself. So the Buddha was very sad. He said, okay, I can bring him back to life, but I need only one thing. So she said, oh, I can get you anything. He said, go get me some cooked rice and I'll feed him. And with that, he will come back to life. So she said, okay, I can cook the rice at my house and bring it. She says, no. I don't want rice from your house. I want you to get me cooked rice from a house where nobody has died. Go there and get me rice from a house where nobody has died. So she said, okay, I'll go. And so she goes to every house in the village. I need some cooked rice. So they said, you can have it. Yeah, but has anybody died in your house? They said, yeah, you know, my grandfather died last year. And she goes to the next house. Yeah, my uncle died in the next house. You know, we had a newborn baby, was only a few days old, it died. And so she went to every house in the village, and there was nobody where there had been no death. Obviously, you know, every family, somebody or the other has died at some time. And that woke her to the truth, you know, that the Buddha was trying to give me a message. And she comes back and she falls at his feet and she says, I have understood that life is temporary. And that's what he says, that's what I was trying to teach you, that whatever is born has to die. Whatever has been created, whether it's a human, whether it's a building, whether it's an animal, a bird, a plant, a tree, a fish, there is no permanence. And if you are looking, and Buddha said, my body, I will also drop my body. You know, I'm not going to live forever. Christ did not live forever. So he says that as long as you hold on to the idea that I am this body and hold on to that belief that I am this body and I have to preserve this body at all costs, eventually you will be disappointed. And either your own body or somebody else's body, you know, somebody, you know, is getting old and dying. And then we say, I must do everything to keep this person alive, no matter what, you know. I mean, yeah, you do everything that is medically possible, but there comes a time when, you know, it is hopeless. You know that there is nothing more can be done. And we still keep on, you know, trying to prolong that existence where there's not even any existence. This person hasn't recognized their children in 10 years, is lying in a nursing home, has, you know, is paralyzed. And one has to come to an understanding that none of this is permanent. This body is not permanent. My mind is not permanent, it is changing. The body is constantly changing, is born, will live for a while and die. The mind will constantly one day be happy, one day be unhappy. The intellectual ideas change. You know, when I was young and I was a liberal, you know, and I was going to Berkeley, you know, the world should be, everybody should be one, and, you know, there should be these rich people and all these ideas, you know, and all these liberal ideas and hippie ideas. And then the moment the guy starts earning and he gets his first paycheck, and then when 40% goes to the government, he said, what happened? I earned $1,000. Where did the 400 go? That's the government. Then he immediately becomes a conservative. Then he immediately becomes a Republican. No. I don't want to pay taxes. So our ideas change. Our emotions change. Our body is constantly changing. One day happy, one day unhappy, one day healthy, one day unhealthy, one day hot, one day cold. And we are all the time complaining, oh, it's so hot, oh, it's so cold. But that is the nature of this world. It never can be always hot, always, you know, we want always 70 degrees. If you want always 70 degrees, move to San Diego. You know, you're living in Bakersfield, you're not going to have 70 degree weather all the time. So someday it will be 35, someday it will be 105. You know, that's the nature of Bakersfield. You're living here, so instead of complaining, just get adjusted. My desires might change, but the teacher says you are that consciousness. That Om, this consciousness, this divinity is your real nature. And once you understand that you are this consciousness, and even when there is a changes in the body, there are changes in the mind, you know, emotions, happy and unhappy, joy and sorrow, success and failure, health and ill health, the wise person remains calm, remains unaffected. Why? Because he has understood, like the Buddha in his nirvana, he had understood, experienced that highest truth, and he could see. You know, it's not that he was cold or indifferent. He had love and compassion. But at the same time, he had that understanding that this world is a changing phenomenon. And the only constant is that. Whatever you can call it. You can call it Brahman. You can call it God. You can call it Nirvana. You can call it consciousness. You can call it Om. You can. But anything, you can call it Jesus or Father in heaven, Allah, it doesn't matter. But it is that one consciousness which is supporting and pervading this whole world. But the world is an expression, is a manifestation, is a temporary creation. And how does this world get created? So they say that the world, the Brahman, is the total consciousness. Is the total consciousness. Now, what does it do? Now, this total consciousness. Now, what does it do? When it identifies in me as this limited individual, Anil, this doctor, this male, this person living in Bakersfield, then I create my own world. I create my own little world. I create my own world where I have my wife and my children and my family and my house and my practice and my mission. And so I create this whole little world of my own existence. And then you have your own world and she has her own world and he has. So each one of us creates our own individual world, which is called Vyashti, which is the individual world. And the sum total of all the world, sum total of her world, his world, my world, the cat's world. The cat has her own world, you know, of mice and, you know, she's running away from dogs and catching mice. And then the little mosquito has his own world where he's roaming around trying to find a sweet human to bite. And so every one of us creates our own world. And the sum total of all the creation of every one of us is the called the total mind. So there is an individual mind, and the sum total of all the minds of all the worlds, of all the beings put together, is called the total mind. That includes all the plants, and even the plants have a mind. You know, might say they don't have much, but still they have the intelligence to move towards light. You know, they also know that when there is light, I should move towards so that I may grow, and they will move away from. So the sum total of all the minds put together is called Samashti. So the individual is called Vyashti, the sum total is called Samashti, and that total mind creates this total universe. So the consciousness, when it identifies with an individual, when it is present in me as life, I create my world. When it is there in the total mind, it creates the total universe. So the creator, who is the creator? The creator is nothing but the consciousness identifying or functioning through the total mind. The individual mind, I create my own world. When the consciousness functions through the total mind, it becomes Ishvara or the creator. And that is whom we, when we say the word God, as the God who created this world, it is the consciousness functioning through the total mind. And we say, well, you can see that very well in the dream. In a dream, now what do I do in my dream? I fall asleep. And in the dream, all the thoughts that have come through my mind, that some may be from last week, some from last month, some from last year, some from 10 years ago, all those thoughts and impressions, I jumble them up and I combine them into one sequence that appears very logical. At that time in the dream, when I am sitting, that appears so logical. You know, I'm there and then I am, you know, like I one time I had, you know, missed a plane for some reason, I got late. And then also there was a person with whom I was having some problems in some major project. So it was so interesting. In my dream, I dreamt that I was running to this train station. And as I ran to the train station, that train took off. I missed my train. I had never missed a train, but I had missed a plane a year ago. And I missed it. And as I was watching, the driver of that train was that person with whom I was having problems. So he was looking out the window and laughing at me, you know, ha, 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 you missed your. So, you know, the dream had no logic, but it was a combination of two different. I had missed a plane and there was this person I was having. And so I combined the two and made him the driver of the train, and he's looking out the window and laugh. So now when I was in that dream, if somebody came and told me, you know, this train is not real and that person is not really a driver, and the station is not a railway, I would have said, what are you talking? You know, it looks so real. In fact, I woke up and all, you know, depressed because I had missed my train. I was sad. And while I am in that dream looks very real. You cannot say that the dream is unreal. No, the dream looks very real. But when I wake up and I say, oh my God, you know, what a fool I was. There was no train. There was no railway station. There was no driver. And I was sleeping comfortably in my bed in Bakersfield. And how am I thinking that I was running and then I was all, you know, out of breath and panting and sad and shocked. And none of this was real. So I created this world out of my own thoughts, out of my own ignorance. And that world at that time looked very perfect. You know, the station looked very real. The train looked very real. the driver of the train looked very, and I was there too. I was running and I couldn't catch the train. So when you wake up, then you realize that this, the dream was not real, was just an expression of my thoughts. In my mind, I created this imaginary world. So similarly, they say that this world is not real, is not permanent. We had talked about that 2 weeks ago. It is a temporary expression of that total consciousness, the total mind. Just as the individual mind creates my own dream, so this total mind has created this world where I am functioning, just as I was running to miss my train in my dream. So I am running here, trying to do this, trying to do that, trying to earn a living, trying to interact with people. And we say, how can you say this world is not real? This chair is real. My body is real. My mind is real. My suffering is real. Yes, the prophet said, no doubt, at this moment, your suffering is real. And your body appears real to you. The chair appears real. The buildings, the fan, the light, everything appears real. And we grant you. We're not saying that it's not at this moment a reality for you. But just as when I woke up from that dream, then now I can sit back and laugh and say, what a fool I was. You know, running after the train. There was no train and there was no driver and I was not never missing it. But at that moment, I was depressed because I missed my train. So similarly, when you wake up to that higher truth that you are that consciousness, then what you will see is that this whole world is just an appearance, just an abhas, just like it will have as much reality as your dream did. And that's a concept that you and I at this moment cannot grasp. We can hear about it, we can read about it, but we have not understood it. But for the great saints, for the great prophets who have experienced that highest truth, that's why Jesus could say the Father in heaven and I are one. Because he had understood that. He had actually experienced it in his depth of his meditation, in the depth of his understanding. He had experienced that highest truth. And so for a wise person, then that person sees everything as the Lord himself. And that's why Jesus could say, he who hath seen me hath seen the Father. He can say that. You and I cannot say that. I cannot say, if you have seen me, you have seen Krishna. Because I don't really have that experience. I don't believe it. Why? Because I have not yet experienced. But he could confidently say that. So that is the understanding of the wise person, that there is only one consciousness. You can call him by different names. This world is just an expression, as an appearance, like a dream, and does not have too much reality. Do not give too much reality to this world. What you and I do is we take this world as so important. Oh, I have so much to do. Oh my God, I have so many emails to answer. You know, I mean, 10 years ago, we didn't have email and we survived fine. And now we are so stressed out. I have so much work. I have so much email. I have so much. It's all self-inflicted. So they say, do not take this world too seriously. Yes, do your job. I mean, if you have emails to answer, answer them. If you have children to take care of them. If you have an office to take care. But ultimately realize that none of this is reality. None of this is permanent. Everything is changing and there is only one permanent reality, and that is my goal in life, to realize that truth, to become one with that consciousness. So function in the world, but do not take the world too seriously. And being a meditation class, this knowledge, how do we apply in our meditation? In your meditation, you remind yourself that I am not this body, I am not the mind, I am not the intellect, I am not the desires, objects, emotions, thoughts, everything is temporary appearance. I am that consciousness. And that idea, when you not only practice in your meditation, but apply that in your day-to-day life, in your dealings with people. Not only I am that consciousness, but everybody is that one consciousness. So then you develop love and compassion and kindness. And so that is how this knowledge can benefit you and ultimately take you to that highest truth. So today we only did the first line of this verse, that there is one consciousness appearing as this temporary world. Yasyaiva sfuranam sadatma kamasat kalpartakam bhasate. Asat kalpartakam bhasate appears, but in reality is that one truth. Now, how can that truth and I be one? That I am, that we'll talk next week. So we have a few minutes. We can, for any questions, any comments, and then we can meditate. It is, all the minds are connected. Actually, every one of us, mind is not on. See, we take the mind as the brain. Mind is not the brain. Brain is an instrument that is used to run this body. Mind is the subtle aspect of the brain, which is actually outside me. Mind is not only inside me, mind is outside. So we are all actually connected. So there is an individual mind, the individual that think of me as being Anil, a man, a gastroenterologist living in Bakersfield. And then there is a total mind. So we are all connected at the mental level. That's why in one of the Upanishads it says that if you break a leaf here, you disturb a star billions of miles away. So no action, because we are all part of that one consciousness. And we are not only connected at the consciousness level, but even at the mental and intellectual level, we are all connected. And that's why when there is, like, somebody is approaching you, and the person may not even say anything, but if that person has anger or hatred or hostility, you can feel it. The person may not speak, but you can sense it, because mentally you are connected that this person doesn't like me. Why is that? And maybe the person doesn't like your appearance, or maybe has had a bad day or whatever. So mentally we are all connected. So there is a total mind. That's what they describe as.
All the thoughts and all the humans.
Yes. We're all connected. Not only humans, but we are connected to the plants and the animals and the birds and the fish and everything. Even the whole cosmos. Everything is connected. So the bracelet is a reminder, but ultimately, in a way, it's an idol. You're holding on to it, and that is good. But ultimately, you can get the same idea by being a witness, that thoughts are arising in me. Now, suppose an angry thought arises. If you identify with that thought, then you say, I'm an angry person. And then you become angry, and then you say things that you don't mean it. Or a lusty thought comes, or a jealous thought comes, or a greedy thought comes, or a hateful thought comes, or a violent thought comes. And you identify with that thought, then you become that. I become a violent person or a greedy person or an angry person or jealous. But if you can watch that there is at this moment an angry thought arising in my mind and do not identify, then you are free. That's what we even tell our children, you know, count to 10, you know, before even when you're angry. So the idea is that to separate yourself from that thought, and whatever it works, whether it's a bracelet, whether it's the understanding, whether it's counting to 10 or whatever. So it is basically you are separating yourself from that. Actually, we are separate. We are that consciousness. The thoughts are arising in me, but I get so lost in that thought that I become totally identified and totally lost in that. And then I become that person, that angry or that hateful or that violent person. And that's why the person will go to the court and say, Your Honor, I don't know what happened to me. In my anger, I picked up the gun and shot that person. You know, in temporary insanity, his lawyer will try to get him off. Because the idea was that in that fit of anger, he identified so much with that anger that he lost sense of who he was and, you know, his vision and his culture and, you know, the all that disappears in a moment. It's not that the person becomes cold like a rock. In fact, the wise person or the saint is more compassionate because he sees oneness in all. But for his own body, he becomes fearless. Like Jesus knew, you know, that one of you is going to betray me and I'm going to be killed. But he was fearless. He had no fear, you know. At the most, they can kill my body, but they cannot do anything to me. So fear comes from the understanding that I am this consciousness and this body, just as my car. Suppose somebody breaks my car. Okay, I'll feel bad for a while, but I'm not going to, you know, cry forever. I'm going to go get the car fixed. So similarly, if something happens to this body, why do I get afraid? Either because I identify with this body, or I only get afraid of another. Like, now this person I don't like, or he doesn't like me, so I'm afraid of him. So fear comes when there are two, right? But when there is no two, when everybody is me, then I have nobody to be afraid of. So that's why the wise person becomes fearless. You know, it's the same concept. You know, heaven and hell are not anywhere else, but they are here itself. Majority of your actions, you get the good or bad results here itself. You work hard, you study well, you get to a good college, you get a good job, and you are successful. You don't study, you don't work, and, you know, you become a failure. Same way, if you try to hurt somebody or you're mean or hateful, eventually you will get, you know, you commit a crime, you will go to jail. So majority of heaven and hell are here itself. But we also have a concept of heaven and hell where you, whatever good deeds you have done, there are worlds where you can go enjoy, or there are worlds where you can be punished, you can be dipped in hot oil, or, you know, so there are these things. So yes, that is one way to keep people from doing wrong things, is to put the fear of hell. But ultimately, one has to understand that in the law of karma, you are responsible for your own heaven and hell. Nobody else created heaven and hell. You are your own creator of your own destiny. If you do good deeds, you get good results. You do bad deeds, you get bad results. So there is not a God sitting up there who is, you know, punishing, or there is not a Satan or a devil who is sitting there punishing people. They say you are punished by your actions, not for your actions. You understand there's a difference. One is I'm punished for my actions. No, you are punished by your actions. So your own actions determine your heaven and hell. So yeah, one at the basic level, one can understand that there is a heaven and hell where if I do bad things, I will be punished. But ultimately, you have to understand that I am the cause of my own punishment. There is no, it's not, my punishment is not caused by my boss or my neighbor or my wife or my husband or my child. I am responsible for my own. So that is the law of karma. And I determine it myself. There is nobody sitting up there, you know, watching me and punishing me. I am responsible. Absolutely right. He goes beyond. Actually, the body is left behind. It is the individual, the mind, intellect, and the vasanas, the jiva, that goes and suffers. But he is already gone beyond it. So he says, yeah, my individuality. And that's why for such a person, they go beyond all karmas. You know, all their karmas are finished. Because he's no longer, see, you and I still identify with this body, mind, and intellect. So the body, mind, intellect actions affect me. But if I am not this body, mind, and intellect, then he goes beyond all. He goes beyond heaven and hell. And the ordinary rules don't apply to him, to the wise person, because he's so much above, just as the dream world. In the dream, suppose I committed a murder, suppose I shot somebody. Now, when I wake up, can I be tried that in that dream you murdered that person? No. You know, that was a different world. Huh?
Not yet.
Right. So similarly, when a wise person wakes up, then he realizes this whole world is just a dream. And so he goes way beyond that. Now, these are, you know, good concepts. I'm glad, you know, everybody's part. And we'll continue to discuss these and it will become clearer, because there are 10 verses and each verse is so beautiful. I'm really enjoying, you know, studying and talking about it and getting everybody's input. So it's very nice.